There's a party. Here's Bridget in her blender. Glad she could make it.
And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with Bridget in her blender, our wonderful, talented ag director. I want to thank everybody for joining us, 106 in the afternoon. And temperatures are in the single digits. What a difference a day makes. We've got some sunshine. There are clouds to the northwest of the FM area that will be moving in to kind of limit the sunshine later today. So let's enjoy the sunshine while it's here. But what a difference, Bridget. Yesterday, 40-plus mile-an-hour winds. I think our peak wind gust yesterday was 48. Blowing snow, snow squall warnings. And today, like flipping a coin, everything changes as we've got lighter winds and blue sky. It's nice to see.
Well, yeah, that's okay. I mean, yesterday it wasn't awesome with the snow squalls. I was in a meeting in the morning, and it was so funny when the snow squall alerts would come on. You could see everybody clicking
like,
their phones off. Yeah, what is this? But we're having a great day, and we're going to have a couple of them from the sound of it.
Yeah, in fact, we've got some really nice. Well, it's nice for this time of the year. It's funny, we were talking earlier that they've got freeze warnings all the way down into areas of South Carolina, and they're calling it bone-chilling cold. Well, in the 20s. For us, that's just another day.
It's a regular day in the neighborhood.
It's a regular day in the wintertime. So it's all relative, I guess. But we do have some nice weather for our area coming in here as we head into, as we head into the weekend for
a palm cyclone.
It's not that bad, though.
We're
not having that.
But we do have some pretty decent weather coming our way as we head into the upcoming weekend. Rest of today, not too bad. A little cold with temperatures in the teens and winds lightly blowing out of the northwest. Then, as we head into tonight, we're looking at temperatures bottoming out around 10 and then rising towards morning. And that will lead to a warmer day on Friday. A few more clouds around the area with highs on Friday in the upper 20s. And then we're right around 40 both Saturday and Sunday around here. Saturday being the pick day, west-southwest winds 10 to 20. Now, Sunday, we will see a storm system pass to our north. We'll be on the warm side of that, so any precip that starts off on Sunday will more than likely be in the form of rain and then mix with and change to snow Sunday night into Monday. We're not looking at a big storm out of this, but we will turn cooler early next week back into the 20s.
So not a storm, but nothing but icy roads.
Well, we could get an inch or so of snow out of it on Sunday night into Monday, so that could grease up the roadways for a Monday morning rush.
Uh-huh.
But
you'll notice me giving you the evil eye look.
I mean, it won't be a big storm, but again, it'll be enough to possibly mess up that Monday morning commute. We'll wait and see on that. And then cold 20s all next week. Now, it'll be interesting. I had a buddy text me. He goes, hey, I thought you said the stormy part of the cycle was it'd be later next week. So let's just say the 12th and the 22nd, like a 10-day stretch of stormier than normal or wetter than normal. Let me rephrase that, wetter than normal conditions according to the LRC. I'm like, I said, that's what it looks like. And he said, well, this model, they're not showing it. I said, it's two weeks away.
Yeah, they always catch up.
It's 2 weeks away, give it time. And now this morning's model run was starting to catch on to one of those storms. So, yeah. I mean, the models that we, that most meteorologists use outside of the LRC, they're no good past 5 days. I mean, they'll give you a general idea, but usually at 7 to 14 days out, it continually changes. So,
yeah, we just wait and watch because we know that things are going to catch up. The LRC has had some great accuracy. And once the cycle sets, as you've said, we can start to share a few more details with people as to what to look forward to for most of the winter.
And we're putting together, I'm in the process of putting together that weather calendar. I will be on vacation after Tuesday of next week. So I'm going to try and get a lot of that done before I leave and then finish that up by the time
I get back. Next week.
Next week's a busy week.
Well, but actually with you gone part of next week and the following, it is like a ag free-for-all. So feel free to leave me a forecast. But I've lined up guests, hosts, and guests. I got all sorts of little surprises going on.
Good. Well, yeah. And it should be a relatively, at least the way it looks now, relatively quiet week next week. So
good weather-wise and so forth. Yeah, because I'm not a meteorologist, so I'm just going to need some very basic things.
Well, I'll record some stuff for Addison, and Addison will play it for you. Or, you know,
Addison,
what?
My new weatherman.
Maybe we should let Addison do the weather for next week.
I could.
What have
the weather forecast for today is the sky is blue. And
maybe we won't.
Clouds.
Yeah, maybe we'll have someone else.
The wind is cold.
It's blowing.
And fast.
It's cold.
I like your style, Addison. That's excellent.
I've never heard the wind described as cold and fast. I like that.
But is it wrong?
I would.
Yeah.
I described
yesterday,
it as that.
That's how it would have been.
That was brisk, kids.
Oh,
super brisk.
Man. Ooh, wow. Now, have you ever heard? I had quite a few emails and text messages. What is this snow squall warning? What is that? Now,
it's okay.
We had one issue. This is new. That the National Weather Service. Well,
this is within the last couple of years we've gotten.
Well, that's what
these.
I mean. Yeah. That's relatively new for the National Weather Service for their new warnings that they put out. Were you surprised by it? I mean, when it came over your phone?
Here's the thing. All right, let's break this down a little bit. First of all, everybody needs drama of some sort. That's why we name things like a bomb cyclone and a snow squall.
Good point.
You know what happened? It snowed and the wind blew hard. Huh. Shocking. Do I get a rim shot for that? Because I felt like that was worth it.
Okay, hold on.
Okay.
It's a delayed rim shot.
Okay, I guess so. The situation is, though, am I surprised by that? Thank you. I'm not. We knew that the winds were going to be gusting. We knew there would be tight bands of snow that would drop a bunch and then move on. So if that's a squall, which I think every sailor would call that a situation out on an ocean.
It's a nautical. It was originally a nautical term.
And that's what it was, you know, apparently in Grand Forks is trying to jazz it up out of the Weather Service and give us a snow squall. If that's the case, I'm going to make up some new terms come spring planting as well.
Oh, I can't wait.
I'll start a list now. Yeah. It'll be awesome.
Yeah. But basically a snow squall warning. It's issued when you've got a heavy band of snow. It's brief. It usually only lasts about 30 minutes. Pushes through your area, dropping visibility to near zero. So it's basically a mini blizzard.
For a short amount of time.
Yeah, for a short amount of time.
Oh, look, a normal day in the neighborhood.
Right.
I mean, it's the winter. This happens.
But if you're not familiar with the area or you just moved here and you're seeing that, it's like, what in the world?
Well, I look at it as a great educational opportunity if you're new in town.
Yeah. And so hopefully everybody got through that yesterday. And again, it was when that cycles back in the next cycle, should be pretty interesting. Now, basically because we've had two or three of these pretty big wind clippers, not a lot of snow with it, but wind events. And go ahead.
I was going to say, I should probably apologize for my snarkiness but when you're a lifelong North Dakotan, this is just normal. So, yes, wind events.
I know.
Wind events happen.
They do. Especially up here.
Yes. Yep. Carry on. Yep. I'll continue. Continue typing away over here.
But, again, when this cycle's back in the next cycle, it'll be interesting to see. It's going to play key how much snow we've got on the ground, because obviously we didn't get a lot of precip with it. Now when it cycles back, you know, do we have as much snow on the ground? Is it crusted? Is it light, fluffy, being able to be blown around like it was? So
let the fun begin, snowmobilers. Now everybody who sells snowmobiles is licking their chops in the hopes that they can do trade-ins.
No doubt
that we've got some.
No doubt. Mm-hmm. We still need a little. So we've only got about 3.5 inches of snow depth. That's what is being reported. So we could use a good 4 or 5 more inches to make the snowmobilers happy, I think.
That depends on what you want. I mean, if you want really great heavy snow, you're going west. You're going to get to better places.
Yep, into the Rockies. So,
well, or just even, you know, Montana, Wyoming.
That works too. That works too. Our guest today.
We have a guest, and we're going to be joined here after a little bit by Amanda Schwartz. Amanda is with the National Toy Farm Museum. I have to say that slowly because otherwise I say the words in the wrong order and they don't make any sense. And then also the Dyersville National Farm Toy Show. Nobody loves talking about farm equipment more than past farm kids. In fact, I brought it up on one of our morning shows today, and Janae and I had to have a discussion about red versus green. It is not the same as red and orange making purple or whatever you thought it was.
You sure?
Yep. Positive.
Okay.
But we all have our favorites. Many of us had our favorite toy tractors, and some still do. In fact, one of the guys we've had as a previous guest who's local has a great business called Boundary. That's with an I instead of a Y. And Nate Filetti, what you can do there is take an actual aerial view of your farm and create a play rug for your kids so they can carpet farm on the rug. And I think that's awesome.
That's kind of cool.
It's very cool. And I think those are the kinds of things that, you know, I would venture a guess that when Amanda has the National Toy Show, she gets a lot of memories from folks and, you know, sees the enthusiasm of young kids now coming in and wanting to see those same toys.
Speaking of old toys, before we go to break, a memory came up on my Facebook, like, remember this from back in the day.
Well, good, because it helps with your Alzheimer's.
It does, no doubt. Do you remember the toy? It was called Merlin. It was like a red flip phone kind of thing.
Oh, not necessarily.
No, it was it was a fancy toy. It was a good memory game.
Okay.
It was called Merlin.
Oh, all right. Now that you say that, I think maybe I do have an idea
so,
what you're talking
about. And so I said, I remember having this. I went online. Sure enough, they've got some on eBay.
Sure.
They're not cheap, but...
See, this is the difference between you as a city kid and me as a farm kid. You got the cool electronic toy. I got an Etch-a-Sketch.
I had that, too. There's nothing wrong with that. And I had the toy cars, and we'd make the track going all the way down into the basement. Hot Wheels. Mm-hmm. Oh, those are great. No
Absolutely.
Doubt. No doubt.
I did that same thing, but it was with a combine.
Oh, there you
crashed it.
He crashed.
So, yes, we're going to catch up with Amanda. We've got some headlines. I got all sorts of cool beef animal things, which is kind of fun, prior to the fact that we were going to have our vet, Amanda, Dr. Emily Fox joining us here very soon. I've got all sorts of things for her. So we'll touch on some of our headlines and weather much later after our guest joins us next. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Today it's all about toys, which seems so appropriate as we're in the Christmas shopping season. I didn't even buy any toys for anybody this year on my Christmas list.
Didn't you?
Not at one. Everybody's getting a little bit older, and I am that aunt who says, what do you need? Not what you want. Because who doesn't have enough toys these days?
I know.
You know, so
nothing wrong with having a few more.
Oh, maybe I should buy some toys for myself. And the person who can help me do that is our guest today. We are joined by Amanda Schwartz. She is with the National Toy Farm Museum and the Dyersville National Farm Toy Show. Hi, Amanda. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thanks for having me.
All right. The Toy Museum and Farm Show. Can you give us a little bit of a description of each? They're not the same. They're two whole separate things that go on, right?
Yeah. So the National Farm Toy Museum, we have two floors of farm toys and displays and try to educate and entertain about the history of agriculture. And we can do it in a really fun way. And I know you talked about the red tractors and the green tractors.
Oh,
that,
yes.
That is a thing.
It's a real thing.
But we can definitely showcase a little bit of everything. So, yeah, it's kind of a fun thing. And we can, the beauty of our location and our what we do is we get to display them all. We love them all. So
for you, you know, you sent me some photos that we're going to run in our live stream while folks are watching. And again, you can catch those on our page on Facebook, YouTube, as well as Acres TV. And what are some of the standout displays, you might say, that you have in the museum?
Oh, yeah, we have. I mean, so the things that I enjoy the most, some of our early history, some of the earliest toys that we have in the museum are a lot of fun. We also have some absolutely stunning dioramas. We just received a new Christmas diorama with snow and everything. So it's just beautiful. And I believe I sent you pictures of that, so your listeners can check that out. And then we also have some amazing history displays. So right now we're featuring a display on the history of the Case company and all of their tractors and kind of that evolution through the years, which is fascinating. So, yeah.
And Amanda, and what are some of the oldest toys that you have in your museum?
So we have obviously some die-cast. Some of our oldest are like the Kenton would be some of the – it's a brand toy manufacturer. We also have some earlier ones that were press board with like lithograph. So kind of like a printed paper design. A lot of those are horse-drawn farm toys, if
right.
you will. And even the earliest farm toy, we always say, is the one that was handmade by the kids emulating what their parents were doing on the farm. So
Now let's say somebody came into your museum and they saw a collectible or a toy that they they've never seen before.
I want it. I want it. I want it. Like, and, I'm 40. Yeah, yeah. I'm my age. Uh-huh. I'm 51, and I'm laying on the ground having like, a fit.
I want this for my collection. Yeah. Can they purchase any of those, Amanda? Is there if they said, hey, I've got here's what I'm going to offer you for this. This is I really need this for my collection.
Not from us. No, not okay. In the museum world. That's not an option, unfortunately.
Okay.
But we definitely, and you know, you guys alluded to it. We have two toy shows here in Dyersville, and I know there are several farm toy shows around the country as well. Our next toy show is in June. It's the Summer Farm Toy Show, and that's the June 7th and 8th. And then we have a National Farm Toy Show in November. And that'll be November 7th, 6, 7, 8, I think. It's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, yeah. And those are, it actually doubles our population in Dyersville. So, it's amazing.
Okay, that brings up a question. Why is the museum in Dyersville?
Well, technically we are the farm toy capital of the world. So we are actually the location that the Ertl Farm Toy Company decided to build their factory here. And then Speccast and Scale Models also are here in this area in Dyersville. So there's three major manufacturers of farm toys in Dyersville.
Okay, that explains a little bit more. And I wanted to ask, you know, who builds farm toys these days? Though I always know Ertl, right? That's probably the most common name that we hear.
Yep.
Is there a bit of a trend where now that we have folks who can do more custom work, especially 3D printing, are people creating more farm toys than are being done as an off the shelf, so to speak, from Ertl and some of the other manufacturers?
There is some customization being done where, you know, you can get like that specific detail with the 3D printing, but not, you know, you have to be careful with that, with licensure from the different OEMs and things like that. But yeah, there's definitely some really creative things being done, especially in the display world, you know, getting the level of detail and getting that scale right, which is really yeah. cool.
Well, just yeah. the things I have seen on displays for farm toys, and like you said, folks are just getting so detailed in what they're doing, and you know, right down to, like I said, Boundary is making the carpets that kids can play on, but after that they're dimensional. We're talking barns and trees and all sorts of things. And what are some of the best details you've maybe seen on those displays, Amanda?
Oh yeah, I love it when they actually have like kind of your like almost your back lot, if you will, where maybe some of the older equipment lives, and they just have some really fun with that, and you know, kind of hide things for people that farm and know where stuff goes on the farm and how yeah. things kind of end up in weird spots. So yeah, there's a lot of really cool designs and things like that. Yeah, it's.
The detail on some. On,
oh yeah.
I'm looking at
the live stream.
At our live stream and yeah. the detail on some of those.
So
wow.
folks that aren't able to see the live stream, I mean, this is everything from bin sites with grain legs. They've got a difference between the gravel and the grass. There's a setup here with a bunch of Holsteins feeding out of a bunk. It's pretty intense.
Edison, go back to the other one that you had in queue. Yeah, that one right there.
Yeah.
I thought that was just an aerial view picture.
Of a farm?
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's toys.
I know it is. It looks, that's what I mean. Yep. It looks so realistic. That is how much detail, how long does it take, Amanda, to put something like that together? I mean, the detail in that's incredible.
Yeah, lots of hours. You're talking hundreds of hours.
Easily.
Of detail. Yeah, and it's a lot about layering and, you know, really taking your time. But, you know, that's the beauty of this. And, wow. and we have a display contest with our Summer Farm Toy Show. Here's our Christmas image.
One.
Yeah, it's just amazing. That was a brand new tractor that was weathered. And you'll, if you, when you come and visit, you'll be able to see the duct tape on the seat.
Oh, really?
You know, it's just, yeah. It's just the love of, oh yeah. It's just perfect. They do such a fantastic job, and they have to have such patience. But
I would imagine.
It is artwork.
And
I'm guessing.
I'm guessing small hands or
Not necessarily.
No.
In fact, I had someone build a custom tractor for me. It's a replica of my dad's 4020, and it's right down to the hydraulic lines. It's got the levers for the bucket, you know, the grapple fork and so forth. And the guy who built it, I mean, he's not an elf.
Right.
So, but it has amazing amount of detail on it. And I'm just ever so blessed that I have that tractor. So, Amanda, we have many more questions, and I think many of our listeners might as well. So please, for those who are listening and want to talk, you can join us on the Red Wing Shoe Shoe Line, 701-293-9000. But above all, we're going to listen to bottom of the hour news. And when we come back, we've got some other questions for Amanda. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for joining us. And a big thank you to our guest today. That is Amanda Schwartz. She is with the National Toy Farm Museum and the National Farm Toy Show in Dyersville. Like I said, I have to slow down and say those in the right order. It just sounds jumbled. But Amanda, we've had a lot of questions going on here in the background. First of all, one of them was, you know, Ertl makes, excuse me, more than tractors. And do you display any of those things or strictly just the tractors from Ertl?
So they do make more than just tractor farm toys. They're actually owned by a company named Tomy. And they make a lot of different cool items for kids of all ages, and just, they go into different categories for sure. We do display other things. Right now we have our Ertl Land display on as a feature.
Out for viewing?
Yes, out for viewing. And there's a lot of really cool things and historically that they've made as well. So yeah, we do have those on display.
And Amanda, what would you say, one of our listeners shot an email in asking, what is the most expensive piece of equipment that you guys have
is
on
it
display?
Is it expensive or is it valuable? How would you,
how'd
you judge that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I mean, we actually also added a price guide for collectors and
what?
For people. Yes, the Farm Toy Museum. We edit that. We work with dealers and auctioneers to put together a price guide. We do the 16 scale and the 64 scale.
Uh-huh.
So if people have their own collections and want to kind of get values or insurance values,
right.
They certainly can. But as far as our museum piece, you know, that's most valuable. Yeah, they're all valuable to me, but yeah, probably some of our oldest toys, just because those are going to be one of a kinds or hard to come by.
Absolutely.
You know, like some of that Kenton, I believe it's Kenton, which is what the lithograph, some of those pieces, you know, are going to be really hard to come by. But, you know, and value fluctuates as far as what it's worth. But I've seen things go to auction. There's some things that, you know, different pedal tractors that are quite rare. They can go upwards of, you know, 25,000 to 60,000. So there's, you know, the value and the market, you know, depending on if it's a chase unit, which is something that would be quite rare, those can be higher as well.
That was one thing I was going to ask, was about pedal tractors. If you have some on display, I have, as the oldest of six, and now I have two brothers who have, between the two farms, five kids, there's a fleet of pedal tractors out there. And I was curious if there's any unique ones in your collection, Amanda.
Yeah, we have several on display. We actually, in our Ertl display, we actually have them mounted on the wall so that, you know, people can see them coming straight on. There's an Ertl, it's a John Deere 100. It would have, I want to say that would be 50s or 60s era, 1950s or 60s. So that one's really cool. That is actually on loan. That's not in our collection.
But, oh my.
That's the beautiful thing about the museum, is that we're always getting to see other people's collections and share those. But yeah, that this is the play area. These are touchable and rideable for kids of all ages. I've seen adults on these.
Oh yes.
Pedal tractors. And up in our case display that I mentioned earlier, we do have some custom items, pedal tractors. And those, you know, probably one of 25, very rare. We actually have pedal size implements as well with that.
Oh, that's cool.
So there's some amazing options and really cool items out there.
You mentioned that case static display, and right now it's I think a rotational display. You said you're talking about the evolution of case. Does that start all the way back with their acquisitions of, say, Farmall, et cetera, and then bring you up to date today as to what that tractor company is?
We actually focus just on Case for this display. We have done a Farmall display in the past.
Oh, okay.
And I'm actually getting ready to do a new Case IH focused display. So, you know, this is Amanda getting a little nerdy with the tractor research.
Bridget's right there being nerdy with you. Okay. So you mentioned some things are on loan, but what if you have a family with a significant collection that someone amassed over time and they give you a call and say, I'm willing to donate this?
Yeah, we would be grateful. You know, we have a deed of gift. It's a donation form and paperwork. And we would be ever so grateful for those things. And that's where I would say the majority of our museum collection has come from, is from the generations of generous people to give to the Farm Toy Museum. So yeah, we would be honored to display that. And that's really been my job and is putting the stories to those toys, because, you know, as you alluded to earlier, there are so many great stories that go with these toys. So yeah.
And Amanda, is your Farm Toy Museum, is that the largest one in the U.S.?
Ooh, I can't claim that. I haven't been to all the other farm toy museums in the U.S., but I would say we're up there for sure. You know, I keep asking my board for more room, so if I can get any
engagement. That's awesome. Good.
Yeah.
So many cool things that you guys are doing down there. When you have your farm shows, the toy shows there in Dyersville, what are you looking at for attendance? And I guess some of those very basic details. You mentioned the dates. Let's do those again. How big is the attendance? Where are people staying? And what if they want to bring things as a vendor?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So the Summer Farm Toy Show, the dates again are June 7th, 8th, and 7th and 8th. It's a Saturday, Sunday show. And that one is run by the Farm Toy Museum. So they would contact me if they're interested in being a vendor. But if they want to come and stay, we have three hotels in Dyersville and then Dubuque. And there's several other communities around us that have hotels and amenities as well. So, yeah, we'd love to help facilitate that. They're welcome to call the museum or our local chamber, Dyersville Chamber, and they would love to help facilitate that. And then the same for the National Farm Toy Show in Dyersville. That one is actually run by Toy Farmer out of Lemoore, North Dakota.
They are.
And they have their magazine, and they do a fantastic job of promoting it. And we love, we're kind of the boots on the ground for them and help with facilitation here of setup and tear down. And yeah, so.
And the Toy Farmer magazine out of Lemoore has done a masterful job over the years. I believe Claire was the editor who started it back in the 80s. And Claire,
yes.
Is it Claire Schreiber? Is that his last name?
Schreiber.
Yeah. And they have, that is a farm show that, or farm toy show that happens over Father's Day every year in Lemoore. It pretty much takes over the city of Lemoore. To tell you what a nerdy farm family we were, that was like a vacation one year. We drove from Little Wishick over to Little Lemoore and stayed in the little, I think the place was called the artist hotel or something. This was nothing fancy, kids.
Right.
And we that was our Father's Day weekend gift to my dad, was we went to a toy show. Yes, but they did all sorts of stuff for everybody. Like, there was even stuff for my mom to do.
And did your dad enjoy it?
Tremendously. Based on the amount of toy tractors that my dad amassed himself, bought my brothers, left for my brothers. I have an uncle who is a very avid collector. Someday we're going to call Amanda and say, look, we've got some things here and some duplicates. Oh, goodness. Do you get folks that call you, Amanda? Because I know you said you do a buyer's guide. Do you get folks that just simply call or email you pictures and say, hey, what do you think this is worth?
Yes, I do. And a lot of times I am unable to help them just because we are a museum and I don't, you know, that's not really, unfortunately, I can't, I wish I could spend all my time doing that, but I can't. So that's kind of why we did come up with that guide, to help be a resource in a roundabout way. But, you know, and I have advisors on my advisory board. We can certainly, you know, if they do send me pictures and they're patient, I can certainly try and help them out. But it's not something that I can do on the regular, unfortunately. So
you have lots of toy tractors in the museum. But what about some of the implements? Because I personally have at the time, Wishig Disc had custom made tiny toy discs, and I have one, and it's, I mean, it's accurate. It's right down to the hydraulic lines on it. And it's like one of 500. There were some limited made.
Yeah.
So do you get some of those in the museum as well?
We do. We do. We actually, the Farm Toy Museum actually does we're doing a renovation unit specifically with funds going towards helping me, you know, do new displays. It is and that is all. We did a cast and wagon one year. We have done just different, like, harvesting equipment.
Sure.
So that it can definitely be, you know, because there's a lot of tractors out there and nothing to, you know, pull. So, yeah, we're still kids. We can still play with these tractors, right?
I didn't say I didn't.
It keeps you young.
It does. I have all my toy tractors in my office. Yeah. That's where they are. And I have little visitors who stop by, and there are certain ones that I will allow them to play with. And there are some I have been told that I don't share very well.
Well, you don't want them breaking it.
I tell you what, that there's a couple there that have some really good detail to them that I don't need those racked.
Just put a small sign on it. Hands off. Yeah.
These little visitors don't read yet.
It doesn't work for some of the adults. I can attest.
That's exactly right. So when you mentioned there's all sorts of tractors, are you representing so many brands? First of all, the easy ones that come to mind are older brands like Minneapolis Moline, Co-op Tractors, Oliver's. But what about newer brands? Are you also seeing some Fence come in?
Yeah. We have some. And it's really a matter of what the different manufacturers, like the major manufacturers, are willing to make. Sure. Obviously, as demand grows for a certain unit, but and then obviously the detail and getting the different tools made, that's an expensive process from their end of things. We're starting to see some of those.
I really appreciate you joining us today, Amanda, to talk about toy tractors, because I think there's a real feel of nostalgia from those listening who are old farm kids, and you know, they still have some of their tractors, which are pretty cool. That makes a lot of people happy. So one more time, where can folks find you when they want to check out a stop in Dyersville?
Yeah. So we're National Farm Toy Museum, 1110 16th Avenue Court Southeast in Dyersville, Iowa. So come and visit us if you're this headed this way.
Facebook or website or anything like that for folks to check out as well?
Yes, of course. Yep. We're on Facebook. NationalFarmToyMuseum.com and then website is NationalFarmToyMuseum.com as well, which is a work in progress. I have a new one coming soon.
Awesome. I look forward to seeing it when it's ready. Thank you, Amanda. And folks, don't go anywhere. We still have a recap of the weather, and I haven't even gotten to any headlines yet, which I've got a bunch on livestock today, so we'll get to those next.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. 1:52 in the afternoon. Clouds are starting to roll in from the north. Bridget's angry. She's like, hey,
it's getting cloudy out there.
We started the show. It was sunny out. What happened?
What's the deal, dude?
Clouds coming in. So, we had BS yesterday.
We have BS here every day. Who are you kidding?
We do. BS blowing snow yesterday. We had some BS this morning. Bonus sunshine. And no BS. We're going to warm up as we head into the weekend.
You are really milking that. Like when we have Red River Retention Authority as a sponsor and I can talk all the damn things.
Right?
Yeah.
Same thing.
All the damn work. Got it.
Oh, man. So enjoy the warmer weather that's coming this weekend. As we said, we're going to warm up to near 40 both Saturday and Sunday. So the icy cold weather that we had yesterday and today will warm up. But it's only going to last a few days as we got more cold air punching in next week with some more chances for light snow.
Well,
all in all, not a bad forecast so far.
And we've already done some snow guesses, and we're thinking it's not going to be extraordinary at this point.
I think we'll have, what did Gary say, 50 inches? I think Gary went 52. So pretty close to average is what Gary was thinking. I'm thinking it's going to be a little lower, probably 40. But it definitely looks like not going to be more than last year, which is not hard to do.
In the farmyard, when you're moving snow to load trucks, you just need a snow bucket, not the really big snow bucket.
Right, exactly. Okay,
that'll be helpful to know.
Exactly. Let's hit on some ag topics. So, we've been kind of letting those go this week.
Have you ever driven down the road and looked at that cow and say, Joe, I wonder when she's due?
No.
Okay. It's not the same as asking pregnant ladies the same.
That's probably why I don't wonder it. Just in case. I don't want to offend anybody.
On average, the gestation period of a cow is about 283 days, but it really can vary based on the breed of the cow and the gender of the calf. So, fun facts. Learn these for trivia, Dean. Pay attention. They may come back. So, an Angus, black-hided cattle, a lot of times we see black-hide, white-face Angus, they are typically a 283-day cycle, while a Charolais, which is a white hide, could be closer to 290. Also, bull calves are frequently a longer gestation period than a heifer. Okay, also a little fun facts. Cattle that deliver in the winter months also tend to have longer gestation periods than calving in the summer. And wouldn't you, if you're the calf, you're like, dude, I stuck a hoof out. It was cold. I'm not going out there. So right now, if you have cattle that are going to be getting ready for calving, we had a number of fall calvers that happened probably October, November. We will see our biggest calving cycle for many ranchers starting in late February through March, maybe a little bit into April. And then you'll have summer calving that can happen again, May and June. Realistically, you can calve anytime you want. You can set the cycle. You can do artificial insemination to set that cycle. You can put bulls out whenever you want.
Okay, I got a question on that.
Sure.
With spring calving season, that could be the most devastating.
It has been at times with the storms that we have.
So why not, like you said, change the cycle and so you don't have to deal with spring calving and push it off a little more.
So I'm going to use a family example. Our herd has always calved in March because once you get into April and May, you got to plant a crop.
You're planning, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and in the fall, you're harvesting. So it really depends on what's going on. If you are a total livestock operation and maybe you only have to worry about hay, your calving dates can really differ depending on what you need to do and when.
Okay.
So it really comes down to personal preference. You have some folks that their herds are big enough, they're calving half in the fall, half in the spring. Just depends on what you want to do.
All right.
But when you do have cows that are getting ready to calve, you know, about that 2 weeks before you think they're going to go, probably going to want to start keeping a little closer eye on them, making sure that you're monitoring things are going well. One of the first things you want to do after calves arrive is make sure they get good colostrum, because colostrum for calves will bring them at least 50 milliliters of antibody, the immunoglobulin, the IgG, and they also have far less bacterial contaminants and they're free of infectious disease agents when you do that. What helps to improve the colostrum to the calf is good nutrition for the mother cow, and you can vaccinate that cow during pregnancy. Late-term pregnancy, so you can vaccinate against a diarrhea-specific pathogen. When calves are born and have diarrhea, it's called scours. It dehydrates the calves. They're small already, right? You have an 80 to 90-pound calf. They dehydrate quickly and can die. So if you can make sure that they have an anti-diarrhea injection through the mother cow, you have a better lifeline on that calf.
Is that common?
It is.
Really?
Yeah, when you see scours, especially in really wet situations, when you have wet springs in your cabin out in a lot of rain or mud or anything like that.
It's just something in the soil? Or
No, it's just it's common.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have a tremendous immune system quite yet.
Right.
And they can pick those things up. Hmm. You know, the other thing that can happen when you're trying to get colostrum to a calf, mama cow might not be real helpful. Some mother cows just suck at this. They're not good. They kick the calf off.
Just bad moms.
They're bad moms. They kick the calf off. They have terrible udders. And so in that situation, you're going to wind up having to take care of that colostrum and get that into the calf yourself.
You know what? That is utterly ridiculous.
Isn't it, though?
You
had no idea. Next, you thought talking about frozen bull testicles was one thing. Wait till we talk about misshapen udders on cows. That's
right.
A whole nother day.
Woo-hoo.
Yep, got it.
Well, that'll do it for Bridget, myself on Weather and Ag and Focus. Don't go anywhere. Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.